So, look out your window. It's March 2026. The snow is finally melting across the GTA, and
And it is not a pretty sight.
no, it really isn't. The brutal reality of what this Ontario winter has done to your house is, just starting to show. You're looking at a landscape that is murky, salt stained, and frankly, a little overwhelming.
Yeah, I mean, it is the absolute definition of diagnostic muddy waters. The damage a harsh winter inflicts on a physical structure, it doesn't just present as one single broken pipe or a shattered window. It's a slow, creeping degradation of your home's exterior and, well, the interior environment too, the one you've been living inside of for months.
So welcome to today's deep dive. We are tackling the ultimate 2026 Greater Toronto Area Spring Cleaning Checklist.
Which is much needed right now.
Oh, absolutely. We're pulling our insights today from a really comprehensive guide published on Mrs. Clean Mall, and right off the bat, we need to reframe what this process actually is.
Yeah, this isn't just about, tidying up your living room.
Right, or making things look pretty for guests. Our mission today is to equip you with a targeted, efficient game plan to systematically undo the specific damage caused by months of road salt, closed-up heating, and freezing temperatures.
We're focusing entirely on the regional quirks that those generic, glossy internet cleaning lists completely miss.
Because if you just attack your house with a wet rag right now, you're going to burn out by noon on Saturday.
Oh, totally. You need a battle plan that respects the unique enemy you're fighting.
So before we even pick up a mop, we have to talk about that battle plan. The methodology recommended here is a room-by-room approach designed for a focused weekend.
Right, so you dedicate one day to the interior, one day to the exterior in the garage.
And maybe add a half day if you've got a larger home with like a finished basement.
Yeah, that makes sense.
But within that room-by-room approach, there's a really specific strategy from Naomi Clark. She's a certified professional organizer who works with clients across the GTA. She advocates for something called the two-pass method. Pass one is decluttering and removing items. Pass two is cleaning the actual surfaces. She claims this cuts your total cleaning time by a third.
Which, I mean, it's a profound shift in how most people approach household maintenance.
But I have to push back on this because, on its face, it sounds completely inefficient to me.
How so?
Well, if I'm walking through my entryway and I pick up, say, a stack of old mail, a dog leash, and a winter hat off the console table, why wouldn't I just wipe the table right then and there?
Right.
Why am I walking away only to walk back to that exact same table an hour later with a spray bottle?
I get that. It feels counterintuitive physically, but it actually makes perfect sense cognitively.
Okay, explain that.
You have to consider the cognitive load versus the physical load. When you're looking at that console table, picking up the mail requires a decision. Does this go in the recycling? Do I need to pay this bill?
Where does the dog leash actually belong?
Exactly. That is triage. Your brain's prefrontal cortex is actively engaged in problem solving and categorization.
So my brain is essentially acting as a manager.
Yes. But scrubbing a surface, however, is a purely physical execution. It's motor function. Spray, wipe, dry.
Right, no thinking required.
None. So when you try to organize a junk drawer at the exact same time you're disinfecting the countertops, you're forcing your brain to violently task switch between high-level decision-making and repetitive physical labor.
And I'm guessing our brains don't like that.
Not at all. Bouncing between those two mental states is the absolute enemy of efficiency. It causes decision fatigue, which is exactly why people, abandon their spring cleaning halfway through the kitchen.
Oh, wow. Okay, so when you separate the cognitive tasks from the physical tasks, you're essentially building an assembly line for yourself.
Precisely.
Pass one, your brain is in triage mode. Sort, move, discard. Pass two, the surfaces are completely clear, your brain turns off the decision-making engine, and you just physically execute the cleaning.
You don't have to stop your physical momentum to figure out what to do with a stray AA battery.
That makes a lot of sense. So once you adopt the two-pass assembly line, the next trap is figuring out where to actually start. Most people, I think, just look down at the salt on the floor or the clutter on the counters.
Yeah, that's the instinct. But the most logical place to start isn't the floor.
Right.
We need to start with the macro environment of the home, the lungs and the eyes. We have to address the trapped air and the blocked light before we even think about tackling the surfaces below.
Let's start with the lungs. The furnace filter.
Oh, yeah. After months of closed windows, sealed doors, and recirculated indoor air, that filter has been working overtime.
It's probably disgusting.
It is. Replacing it immediately before you turn off the heat for the season is just non-negotiable.
I mean, it costs a few dollars, but it dictates the baseline air quality of your entire house.
Exactly.
And speaking of the air, we have to talk about the ceiling fans. There's a detail in our source material that genuinely made me shudder.
The dust.
Yes. A single ceiling fan blade can accumulate a full centimeter of dust by spring. A centimeter.
Well, the physics of a ceiling fan actually attract that dust. The friction of the blade spinning through dry winter air creates a static charge.
Oh, like rubbing a balloon on your hair?
Exactly like that. And that charge pulls airborne particles directly onto the leading edge of the blade, just builds and builds, layer upon layer, for months.
Meaning, if you turn on that ceiling fan on the first warm day of the year without wiping it down with a damp cloth first,
you are in for a bad time.
You are essentially detonating a static charge dust bomb in your own living room. You're taking months of accumulated winter dead skin, pet dander, and fabric fibers, and launching them directly into the air you just tried to clean with your new furnace filter.
And this is why spring cleaning is fundamentally different from routine maintenance. We experience this psychological frog in boiling water effect during the winter.
We just go blind to the things that happen gradually.
Yeah, we don't notice a microscopic layer of dust settling every day.
Mm.
We don't notice the indoor air getting slightly staler. We just adapt.
Which brings us to the eyes of the house, right? The windows. A gray Ontario winter takes a massive psychological toll.
Oh, February in the GTA is just...
It's brutal. Anyone who has lived through it knows the feeling of just accepting the gloom.
But part of that gloom isn't actually the weather outside. It's the condensation staining on the glass itself.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, when warm, humid indoor air hits a freezing cold window pane in January, condensation forms. That moisture traps dust and leaves behind mineral deposits when it evaporates.
And it happens over and over every single day.
Right.
The slow dimming of light through that stained glass happens so gradually, you trick yourself into thinking the days are just darker than they actually are.
Exactly. Cleaning both the interior and exterior panes physically changes the volume of natural light entering the room.
There's also a mechanical component to the windows that I completely forget about. The window tracks.
Oh, the tracks are terrible.
Yes. You open the window for that first spring breeze, you look down into the track, and it is a graveyard.
Gross, but true.
Dead bugs, dirt, and grime that's been frozen in place since November. You have to clean those out so the windows operate smoothly and you don't grind that dirt into the weather stripping.
Plus, this is the exact moment to order and reinstall any replacement screens that took a beating over the winter before the spring insects actually arrive.
You're restoring the boundary between the inside and the outside.
Yeah. Over the winter, we seal ourselves in to survive the climate. Spring cleaning is about safely opening that envelope back up.
But here's the catch. We've cleared the air. We've dismantled the dust bombs. The light is finally shining in through crystal clear glass. But that new bright sunlight illuminates a brutal reality. It shines directly onto the heavy traffic zone.
Yeah, the utility spaces of the house, the hidden grime and the hardest working rooms suddenly becomes just impossible to ignore.
We are moving from the home's macro environment down to the ground level. And the absolute ground zero for this is the entryway or the mudroom.
Which is often the last place to get deep cleaned because we think of it as a dirty space by default.
Right, but it takes the biggest beating of the entire house.
You really need to treat the mudroom less like a hallway and more like a quarantine zone.
I love that phrase, a quarantine zone.
It's true. Its entire purpose is to prevent outdoor abrasives from migrating into the home's delicate interior ecosystem.
And the primary abrasive, of course, being road salt. We're talking about sweeping, mopping, and actively treating salt stains on floors.
Because when road salt gets tracked onto hardwood or tile, it's not just messy. Salt crystals are jagged and highly abrasive.
Yeah, the guide points out that every time you step on a stray grain of salt in your hallway, you're applying pinpoint pressure that grinds that crystal directly into the polyurethane finish of your hardwood.
It is literally sandpaper on your floors.
You also have to reset the infrastructure of that quarantine zone, wiping down the inside of the front door and the frame, cleaning the coat hooks, washing the boot rack.
And you must wash or replace the mat inside the door.
Oh, definitely. A salt-saturated mat stops acting like a sponge and starts acting like a salt dispenser for your shoes. Once the quarantine zone is secure, we move to the engine room of the house, the kitchen. And this is where my perspective completely shifted during this deep dive.
How so?
Because the kitchen section of our research genuinely surprised me. It's not about wiping counters or making the sink shine. It's about saving thousands of dollars on appliance replacement.
Ah, yeah. You're talking about moving the heavy appliances.
Yes. Pulling out the refrigerator to vacuum the condenser coils. Pulling out the stove to clean the grease trap behind it. Nobody gets thrilled about cleaning behind a stove, but the mechanics behind this are undeniable.
Let's look at the thermodynamics of those refrigerator coils for a second.
Please do.
The condenser coils are responsible for releasing the heat that the fridge removes from its interior. Over the winter, as your house stays closed up, those coils become blanketed in a thick layer of dust and pet hair.
And dust acts as a thermal insulator.
Right, so the heat can't escape. The coils can't release the heat efficiently, which forces the refrigerator's compressor to run hotter, harder, and longer just to keep your food cold.
So by simply taking a vacuum attachment to the back of your fridge, you are actively preventing premature compressor failure.
And instantly lowering your monthly electricity bill.
It's operational maintenance, not just aesthetics. And the same principle applies to the range hood filter. You need to soak it in hot water and dish soap.
Because over the winter, with the windows closed, every time you sear a steak or fry an egg, atomized grease pulls up into that filter.
And by March, it is a sticky, solid block of flammable material that completely chokes the airflow.
Yeah, you also need to empty and wipe the dishwasher interior, clean the rubber gaskets, and run an empty cleaning cycle to clear out hard water deposits.
And there is one detail here that feels so obvious once you hear it, but I guarantee almost no one does it.
What's that?
Washing your reusable grocery bags and cleaning your recycling bins inside and out.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, who actually remembers to wash the fabric bags they use to carry raw meat and produce week after week?
Barely anyone. It highlights a crucial psychological barrier, I think. We assume the things that manage our waste and transport our food are inherently self-sustaining.
Well, they really aren't.
No. And these tasks represent the core difference between regular weekly chores and an annual spring cleaning. You're systematically resetting the systems that manage the house.
You're cleaning the cleaners.
Exactly. You are organizing the organized.
Cleaning the cleaners. I love that framework. And that transitions perfectly into the next heavy utility zone, which deals entirely with managing human waste and moisture, which is the bathrooms.
The bathrooms are uniquely vulnerable during an Ontario winter, mostly because of the sheer volume of trapped moisture.
Right. You're taking long, hot showers in January. The bathroom fills with steam, but the house is sealed incredibly tight to keep the freezing cold out.
And if the bathroom exhaust fan is choked with lint and dust?
Which it is, because it's been running constantly.
Then it can't pull that humid air out of the room.
And that trapped moisture alters the dew point inside the room, right? The steam condenses on the coldest surfaces, usually the exterior walls, the window frames, and the silicone caulking around the tub.
And that is exactly how mold gets a foothold.
Because of the temperature fluctuations. Between a hot shower and a cold winter night, that silicone caulking expands and contracts.
Yep, and micro tears form in the caulk, the condensation settles into those tears, and mold colonizes the gaps.
Wow.
By cleaning the exhaust fan, descaling the shower head, and actively checking the caulking for separation, you're restoring the room's ability to breathe and dry out.
You also need to replace the shower curtain liner entirely and toss out expired products from the medicine cabinet.
You're systematically removing the organic material that bacteria and mold feed on.
Okay, so we've scrubbed the engine room, we've secured the quarantine zone, the utility systems are back online and breathing properly. Now we shift gears to reset the resting spaces, sanctuaries.
The bedrooms and the living areas.
Right. And these require a different approach because the accumulation here is primarily fabric-based and comfort-oriented.
Yeah. You start by rotating or flipping the mattress if it's two-sided to ensure even wear. You wash all the bedding, including the duvet covers, the pillow covers, and the mattress protectors.
You clean under the beds, which is where those massive dust bunnies congregate.
And you wash or vacuum the blinds and curtains, which act as giant vertical dust filters all winter.
There's also a highly practical decluttering directive here. Donate the winter clothing you didn't actually wear.
Oh, that's such a good point.
It's brilliant timing. Right at the change of the season, your memory of what you actually pulled out of the closet is fresh.
Yeah, if you didn't wear that heavy wool sweater during the absolute coldest weeks of February,
yeah,
you're never going to wear it.
Get it out of the house.
Moving into the living areas, you apply that same fabric reset. Wash the throw pillow covers and the sofa cushion covers. Shampoo the rugs to pull up the dry winter dirt that the vacuum missed.
And then you wipe down the walls, the baseboards, and the light switches. Fingerprints and smudges accumulate on light switches so incrementally over the winter, we just stop seeing them entirely.
We really do.
But my favorite insight from the sanctuary spaces is about the lighting itself. The guide says you need to dust all the light fixtures, including wiping down the actual physical light bulbs and replacing any dead ones.
Which, I mean, dusting a light bulb seems like an absurd micro-task until you understand how light scatters.
Exactly. A layer of dust sitting on a bulb doesn't just block light. It scatters the lumens. It diffuses the output, making the room feel noticeably dimmer and the light quality feel muddy.
You wipe that dust off, and suddenly the room's lumen output jumps up.
When you compound that with the clean exterior windows we talked about earlier, you are completely transforming the visual environment of the space.
You are literally brightening your sanctuary.
But we aren't at the finish line yet. We've pushed the winter out of the bedrooms, out of the living room, through the kitchen, and into the mudroom. Now we have to push it out the front door and entirely off the property.
We have to tackle the exterior.
Which is, of course, heavily dependent on the weather cooperating. March in the GTA can give you sunshine one day and freezing rain the next.
But the minute that weather breaks, you need to be outside. You sweep the front walkway and the driveway.
You check the eavesdrops for any debris, branches, or granules that fell off the roof during the thaw. You hose down the porch, the deck, and the balcony.
But there is one crucial non-negotiable step for GTA homeowners that we have to unpack here.
The driveway salt.
Yes.
If you had winter road salt on your driveway or concrete walkways, you must rinse it off immediately. We tend to think of salt as a purely functional tool. You know, it melts the ice, it keeps us from slipping, and then its job is done.
But leaving leftover salt on your concrete in the spring is like leaving acid on your teeth.
That's a great analogy.
You are guaranteeing yourself expensive concrete cavities. The chemistry behind what that salt does to concrete is actually highly destructive.
Because concrete isn't just a solid block.
No, it is highly porous, like a very dense sponge. When salt sits on the surface, it lowers the freezing point of water, creating a salty brine that dissolves and seeps deep into the microscopic pores of the concrete.
And in the spring, the temperature fluctuates wildly. It thaws during the sunny day and drops below freezing at night.
Yes. When that salty water trapped inside the concrete pores finally freezes at night, it expands by roughly 9%.
9%.
Yeah, that internal hydraulic pressure is immense.
Yeah.
It forces the top layer of the concrete to literally pop off and flake away. This is called spalling.
So exterior spring cleaning isn't about curb appeal at all. Power washing the salt off your driveway is preventative structural maintenance.
You're physically washing away the chemical decay before it shatters your infrastructure.
It is worth mentioning that executing this entire strategy, from the cognitive load of the two-pass method down to the chemistry of driveway salt, is a massive undertaking.
It's a lot, and the research acknowledges that.
Right. For homes that have recently undergone winter renovations, or if this entire weekend warrior checklist is simply beyond your current physical bandwidth, there is a professional option.
The sources note that residential cleaning services handle this exact systematic reset.
Yeah. They specifically highlight coverage across Vaughan, Aurora, and the surrounding GTA communities, particularly for post-renovation cleaning where you're dealing with, like, layers of drywall dust on top of the usual winter grime.
Sometimes the most efficient pass one you can do is recognizing your own limits and handing the execution over to a team equipped to handle the heavy lifting.
Okay, so let's bring this all together. The core mission of a successful 2026 GTA spring clean is not about perfection. It's about fighting back against the specific measurable toll of an Ontario winter.
It requires a logical room-by-room system. It demands that you separate your cognitive decision-making from your physical scrubbing.
You have to address the uniquely regional threats. The road salt acting as sandpaper on your hardwood and destroying your concrete. The condensation separating your bathroom caulking and the static charge dust bombs waiting on your ceiling fans.
You are resetting the systems that keep your home healthy.
But before we wrap up this deep dive, I want you to consider one final thought. We started by talking about looking at your house through the muddy waters of winter damage, trying to diagnose the slow degradation of the physical structure.
Mm-hmm.
But if a simple shift in the seasons can uncover so much hidden accumulation, from a centimeter of fan dust to salt-eaten concrete to the mold inside your winter tracks, what else in your daily environment has slowly degraded over the winter without you noticing?
That's a really interesting point. It forces you to question your own adaptability.
Exactly. When you spend months closed up in the dark and the cold, your baseline for what is acceptable shifts. Perhaps this exhausting yearly ritual of spring cleaning isn't really about achieving a cleaner house at all.
Maybe it's a forced psychological mechanism to reset our own tolerance for the clutter, the grime, and the friction that we've simply grown blind to.
Spot on. You aren't just cleaning your house, you are recalibrating your own standards for how you want to live. So as the snow finally melts this March, grab your checklist, stick to the two-pass method, and go find out exactly what you've been putting up with.